You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network. That's how long I've been on ya.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell, your host. What an awesome show we got lined up for you today. Volume 3, Episode 3. It's going to be on fire today, man. We got Adam Martin from bookies.com and MMA Oddsbreaker joining us today to get his best for UFC Jacksonville coming up this Saturday on UFC ABC 5. That's right, UFC on ABC 5. The fights will be on national television this Saturday, and it's going to be a blast. We're going to catch up with Adam. We're also going to chat with Nolan King, my buddy from MMA Junkie. We're going to talk about his time at Bellator 297 this past Friday. Chat about The Ultimate Fighter. Nolan has some scoops because he's been doing a podcast with Kurt Holobo, who's actually living in the UFC Fighter House, and he's on the show. So we're going to get some details to actually what goes on in there and get Nolan's thoughts on the whole thing. And last but not least, the main entree. Today we get to catch up with the number 11 ranked UFC flyweight contender Macy the Future Barber, who takes on number 9 ranked Amanda Ribas at UFC Jacksonville this Saturday on ABC National Television. Macy is ready to go to war and in search of her fifth straight victory. She wants to take that spot from Amanda Ribas at number 9, and she is ready to go. Man, lots to talk about on this show. Volume 3 is ready to go, and we're up and going. I'm still wiping the blood off of my mouth from this past weekend, man. I got my ass kicked in the UFC. I there's no way I could run from it. I definitely did. Marvin Vettori, holy smokes. He got his ass whooped. 257 shots landed against Vettori. Cannoneer put a whooping on Marvin Vettori. Holy smokes. There's no better way to put it, man. How did he keep standing? I don't understand. I think he got more credit because he didn't go down and he survived 5 rounds more than anything. You know, that showed off his durability, if anything, but also shows that Marvin Vettori is not anywhere near middleweight championship ready. You know, is he a contender? Is he a little gatekeeper right there? Yeah, sure. His durability takes him a long way. He has excellent wrestling. But when it comes down to fighting the top-notch guys, and that's who Jared Cannonier is, the killer gorilla, man, you're going to go miss with a bad guy right there, because Jared Cannonier really put a whooping on him. And it only seems like Jared got better after he got staggered in the first round. Marvin Vettori had a great first round. And then Jared Cannonier woke up in the second round and said, forget this. There's no way I could lose to this guy. I'm a lot better than he is. And he proved that. I didn't think that was true. I thought Marvin's durability and resistance and stamina would actually prove to be lethal in this fight. I thought he would take Cannonier down to the ground in the later rounds. But that wasn't true. He just wanted to keep slugging for it. And he got his face rearranged. There's no better way to put it. I also thought Christian Duncan would look a little better in there against Armin Petrosian. I know a lot of people thought Petrosian was going to go in there and win. I thought Duncan was going to get the job done. I thought he was more elusive. I thought he fought a stupid fight. His fight IQ was very, very low in that fight. Man, talk about bad timing, throwing himself in bad positions, hesitating into every single shot. Just not a good performance by Duncan whatsoever. You know, who do I got to give a big shout out to? I got to give a big shout out to Nicholas Dalby at UFC Vegas 75. He put on an excellent performance against Salikov. You know, he kind of had a slow start in round 1, I thought, and then he really, really, really turned it up. You know, Nicholas Dalby is a force, man. That guy could wrestle. He could strike. He has durability. That guy is a major, major problem in the welterweight division. Get ready to hear more of his name. And also, Torres, what he did to Mota was crazy. Manuel Torres completely landed a vicious, vicious, vicious elbow to Nico Mota. The guy went straight down. Nico was fighting a pretty good fight. I thought landed some pretty good shots. And all of a sudden, Torres just lands this brutal elbow that just destroys Mota. One of the worst elbows I've actually seen in quite some time. It kind of reminded me of the elbow that Matt Brown gave Diego Sanchez in their fight, where, you know, Matt Brown just landed that elbow and Sanchez went straight down. Very, very similar, except this one wasn't behind the ear. This one was like right on the face / chin / nose. It was just a face plant to the elbow, man. It was a vicious, vicious thing to see. Great, great fights at UFC Vegas 75. I hope everybody had a great Father's Day weekend this past weekend. I certainly did. I went to Big Bear for the weekend with my father, my mother, my wife, my sister joined the party. We had a great time, went boating, and I did not skip the CONCACAF Nations League final, baby. USA all the way. Took care of Canada this weekend. Also took care of Mexico last week. Back-to-back Mexico and Canada. And we played against Canada's A team, and the USA brought their A team, and we showed the world who the best team in North America is. That really, really made my weekend. USA was at plus 150, and then it dropped down to plus 120 going into the match against Canada. I thought that was crazy. You know, I jumped on that as soon as I saw that, man. USA right now is playing with a purpose. They're playing with an identity, and they're trying to prove for the world that they are actually a very, very good team. And to watch out for them, Copa America come next summer, and also the World Cup in 2026 is right around the corner, and we're coming in hot. The USA is here to stay, and we have a very, very solid starting 11 with a bunch of danger coming off of the bench. My USA rant is over. I had to let that out because, boy, was I screaming goal. And if you guys hear me on Sports Rage Late Night with Gabriel Morenci every single night, every single weeknight and Sunday night, from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific, 12 a.m. Eastern to 3 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM channel 159, also on the Mightier 1090 and many other platforms. You can also find us on Sports Rage Late Night every single night except Saturday nights on YouTube with Gabe Morenci. We'll be chopping it up. Also, guys, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you could find me at Hit Burbell. Again, that's at Hit Burbell. I'll be posting all my fight news. I'll be posting soccer scores, tennis scores, you name it. We're having a blast on my Twitter page at Hit Burbell. I'm excited to get to our guest today. Again, we're talking to Adam Martin, and we're going to get his best bets. Also, Nolan King from MMA Junkie. We're chatting Bellator 297, and Macy the Future Barber joins us today on Hit the Bell. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
What's up, fight fans? Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. It's an honor to have this guy on, man. This guy has been one of my buddies for a long time. We started chopping it up back in about 2017, 2018. He is here now, and that is Nolan King from MMA Junkie USA Today. You can also find his work on Tapology. You can follow Nolan on Twitter at MMA Kings. What's up, Nolan? Welcome back to Hit the Bell, brother.
Yeah, man. I appreciate having me back on. It's been a minute, but hopefully we make up for it today. I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah, man, you know, before getting too much further into this interview, I got to actually give you a congratulations. First thing is first, my friend, four-year anniversary with MMA Junkie. I think you actually came on Hit the Bell for the first time when you actually just started with them. Talk about an amazing journey. You've been covering MMA, the ins and the outs, for so long, and you've been doing a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's crazy. Time certainly flies. I can't believe that it's already been 4 years. It seems like you said, just yesterday I was on here chatting up with you, I think, right around the time that I got that gig. So it's been fun, man. It's been, I'm super lucky to be able to do this, get up every day, cover some of the best athletes in the world, and, watch people punch each other in the head for fun. I mean, it's a great sport. You meet a lot of interesting people, and I'm excited to see, I'm excited to have things continue to many more years.
Yeah, Nolan, you're a lucky man. You get to cover the sport that you love. You get to see the best athletes in the world. And you actually got to do that this past weekend in Chicago, Illinois at Bellator 297. What did you think of the event? It's one of the biggest events Bellator has had all year. And I even think they beat out all the other MMA events of the weekend. And that's crazy to say.
Yeah, it was a good event, man. It was a really stacked card. I think that there's benefits and detriments to Bellator doing these longer cards that are deeper. They're once they get here, you're like, man, you look at the lineup up and down, and it's a really spectacular card. I'm sure that they would prefer to be able to put on more events and not have to have 16 fights on a card and kind of have people maybe have Bellator slip out of their brain, three or four weeks in between each event. But when they do hold cards, I mean, I think they've been nailing it recently. Their matchmaking's been on point. They're putting together matchups that are more merit-based than, having guys that get kind of squash matches. I think they've moved away from that sort of model. So I think the product is at an all-time high, and it's in an interesting time for Bellator. I mean, they're talking about sales, and we talked to Scott Coker last week about that. And then in the midst of it, like you said, they put on great fights too. I mean, the top two fights last weekend, I think, were about as good. You saw some athletes that are about just as good as anybody in their weight classes. And yeah, I mean, the card, even though there was a lot of decisions on the main card, I think that the action was pretty strong, especially in the top two fights. And it was a good night in Chicago, man.
It was a good night, man. And you never know where a fight's going to go. That's why you got to fight. That's why you have to compete. That's why these athletes compete and train the way that they do and get ready for these events. And they want to put on the best show. You got to see Sergio Pettis, little Pettis, in there take on Pitbull. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite fights to get ready for. One of my favorite fights to watch. High fight IQ, both very skilled fighters. Sergio Pettis went into this fight as a plus 150 underdog. I could not believe that. And then it was even crazier to hear him say that he actually thought he was going to lose the fight before the fight started because of who Pitbull actually is. I saw the weigh-ins on Thursday morning. I thought Pitbull looked like a skeleton. I didn't think he looked very healthy going into that fight versus Pettis. What did you think of that weight cut that Pitbull had? Did you think he was going to win the fight going into that fight?
I did think he was going to win. I think being around athletes on a regular basis, I mean, everybody sees it. They get up in front of the media and you know, fans get to see the videos of them talking, and you can tell when a guy's in rough shape. But I think, too, there's a lot of guys that are very good at hiding when they're not feeling so hot. And so they know when the cameras are rolling, and kind of observing them outside of when the cameras are on them. Sometimes I think being there, you can, as media, we can get a pretty good feel for how guys are feeling. And I have to be honest with you, man, I thought Patricio, just his interactions that I saw all week, he seemed like he was in good spirits. He seemed like he was in less rough shape in terms of, you know, dragging or being dehydrated or kind of just being flat and down. Like you see some guys that cut too much weight. Like there were guys that were there that are in their normal weight classes that I thought seemed more miserable than him. So initially I was kind of like, man, he's lost a lot of, you know, his strength, his muscle. He looks very slim, like maybe a little bit too slim down, but seeing his mannerisms, it gave me a little bit of hope again, you know, hey, maybe this cut is as easy as he's saying it is. And he nailed weight. I mean, he came in light. He came in almost a pound below the championship requirements. So I don't think necessarily it was a crazy unhealthy move, but I think maybe he lost some of his advantages by moving down there. Like, you know, I think maybe one of the things he has up at 145 is his speed, is his ability to use his footwork, whereas down at 135 pounds, I mean, we saw Sergio Pettis put together a real clinic, man, and props to him. I mean, all the eyes were on Patricio all week. There was all the articles, you know, written by myself and others about how Patricio was on the verge of history, and that was a major storyline, and I think that was deserved. You know, the guys don't usually even attempt that, but for him to go in there coming off of 18 months out, 14 months of rehab on a serious knee injury, after a title fight that a lot of people kind of said it was a cool ending. He threw a spinning back fist and he won, but he was losing that fight, so he's not even the best bantamweight in Bellator. That was kind of a bit of a narrative as well, and for him to go out there and just essentially, you know, I don't want to say school Patricio Pitbull, but really just decisively defeat him in a very technical manner, win every single scorecard on every single judge's set of scorecards except one round from one judge. That's just pretty incredible, man. So I was very impressed with him before. I was very impressed with him during, and I was very impressed with what you said, his very honest assessment of his bout afterwards, saying that he was nervous and he wasn't even sure that he was going to win. And so I think that was a really honest take from him. And just top to bottom all week, I was very impressed with Sergio. I think he was the real star coming out of that event.
We are talking to Nolan King from MMA Junkie USA Today. You can also find his work at Tapology. You could follow Nolan on Twitter at MMA_Kings. We are chopping it up, talking Bellator 297 that just took place this past Friday in Chicago, Illinois. Sergio Pettis gets the win over Pitbull, remains a champion, has a bunch of belts. Patchy Mix is on the way. Do you think Patchy Mix gets the job done? I think his length kind of disturbs Sergio a little bit when they fight. I think Patchy Mix is a real deal, and I think he's actually gotten better after every single fight, you know, because Patchy did lose to Archuleta a couple years back, and it's not the same Patchy Mix that we saw a couple years ago, Nolan. I think this guy's a real deal, and he actually could be one of the best champions there is at Bellator.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Patchy Mix, from the beginning of the time when he came on my radar as an amateur, he was one of these guys coming out of I'm trying to remember exactly where he was fighting at the time. I think it was like in Western New York or something, but he started to get some buzz because he had this crazy amateur record where he had, I think he was like 11 or 12-0 with most of those as finishes. And so he was kind of ahead of his time as a guy that took like a dozen or so amateur fights. That's a little more usual now, but we back then we didn't really see that as much. So for him to come through and then kind of burst into the professional scene, I think he had a huge run with King of the Cage, kind of got some hype. The UFC, from my understanding, pretty much told him they weren't really interested, which at the time was very surprising to me. I think I wrote a story on him maybe about him in like 2016. I used to have a series called, you know, it was about fighters that should take the jump to the UFC. And he was on there. I was very surprised that the UFC seemed to pass on him. Ultimately, he landed in Bellator. And since then, man, I mean, he's just gotten better every fight. He had one loss to Juan Archuleta, title fight back in 2020 in the bubble. It was a close fight against the champion at the time. And he just, you know, that was a make it or break moment in his career. He could have just kind of stayed. He could have regressed. He could have just plateaued there. But he ended up just continually improving. You know, he took a step back in competition. And then from there on out, he seemed to take a step forward and forward and forward. And then he fought three elite fighters in a row, and he beat them all pretty soundly. Horiguchi, Magomed Magomedov, and then that huge 80-second knockout against Rafael Stotts via knee. So he's looked better every single fight. He's huge for that division. He's 29 years old, which just means that he's probably, you know, kind of getting close to his prime if he's not already in it. And he's just matured so much as a fighter. He's good on the microphone, and I think he really can stake claim as one of the best bantamweight, if not the best bantamweight in the world. I think Bellator and Scott Coker can make that claim about him. Now, obviously, he's got Sergio Pettis in his way, and Sergio is coming off of a win where he was doubted, and I'm sure he'll be doubted again when people see the size difference in the face-off and everything for this one. But I think it's a great fight, man, and I think it's Bellator, again, those few guys that they have at the top of most of their divisions, you look at and you're like, I would love to see those guys fight the UFC, you know, top three, top two, fight for a title over there. I think that that's what's keeping the intrigue here and continues to lift up Bellator and legitimize them as fights like this. I think it's one of, if not the best fight that Bellator can put on right now.
No, I 100% agree with you, man. I wish the fight gods would allow Dana White to actually, you know, merge with some of these fight organizations so we could really see the whole picture with some of these fighters. You know, us as fight fans and guys that work for the sport and cover the sport and love the sport would love to see Patchy Mix and Sergio Pettis fight some of the best guys at the UFC and so forth with one championship in the PFL. Just, you know, let's just see what it's all about. Like a real Mortal Kombat, Nolan King, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Talking about that, I wanted to jump into Nemkov and Yoel Romero because I do think that Nemkov right now is the best light heavyweight fighter that there is in the world right now. Would you agree?
Yeah, he's right up there. I mean, the thing about light heavyweight right now, it's in a very strange place. I mean, there's not been kind of a dominant champion in the UFC. We've seen kind of a rotating door of champions over there. And I think as you move up the weight classes, right, there's a lot more flaws I think you can see in fighters' techniques. Light heavyweight, heavyweight in particular, they what they lack in technique, they make up for in strength and the ability to end fights very quickly. And I looked at, you know, Jamal Hill, for example, his last performance, I think, against Glover was clearly the best of his career. I mean, if that's the guy that goes out there every night, I think he can claim that he's the best in the world. With that being said, I think you need some consistency. You need to see Jamal Hill fight another, you know, number one contender type and really to really gauge how good he is. Because, sure, maybe he's improving at a crazy rate, too. But we just don't have enough data to really stake the claim that he's the best 205er in the world. So that's where Nemkov comes in for me. You know, he's certainly been consistent. He's fought decent guys. He's, you know, he's fought some guys, too, that are hard to look good against, and he's looked good. I think that, you know, Phil Davis and Corey Anderson oftentimes for their opponents don't necessarily present the sexiest matchups. And even Yoel Romero, I mean, we've seen some of the better champions in MMA history look kind of, you know, I don't know, shoulder shrug, just kind of like, eh. They've looked okay against him, like Israel Adesanya. You know, the Whitaker fights were great. Obviously, that was a fun battle, but he had his moments against Rob as well. So for me, I think Nemkov can certainly stake that claim. You obviously have Jiří Procházka. To me, it's kind of funny. If you were to ask me who I think would, if you did head-to-head matchups with all the top, I don't know, six or seven names at light heavyweight, who would be the best, who would win the most fights against the other five or six guys, it would be, for me, Magomed Ankalaev, who, again, isn't the most sexy fighter in terms of his style and his abilities to finish and whatnot, but I think he's so technical. But that's the thing. Right now, the UFC's light heavyweight division's in a weird place. So I think Vadim Nemkov can certainly stake that claim. I think if Scott Coker, as much as he's always going to say whatever champion he has is the best in that weight class, I think when he says it about Nemkov, you can back up that claim. So again, big feather in Bellator's cap to have Sergio Pettis on the roster, but Vadim Nemkov too. I mean, he's their number one pound for pound fighter right now, and he's a guy that would go over to the UFC and I think be competitive with the top three guys and probably very well likely beat some of them.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head, actually, with Ankalaev, and shame on me for actually forgetting about him, because he is an amazing fighter. I actually had the honor to watch him fight at UFC 282, where, in my opinion, he beat Jan Blachowicz, and I think he beat him soundly. I think he had one bad round in that fight, but besides that, he controlled the fight. He did all the right things. He pushed all the right buttons, you know, pretty much took his soul, in my opinion. Jan Blachowicz thought he lost the fight and was shocked when they actually scored it a draw, and I was sitting by the cage, and I saw Ankalaev walking by me, and he was in tears. He was devastated. He felt cheated, as he should have felt cheated, Nolan. You know, so it's crazy to me actually thinking about that name, because he got lost in the shuffle. When you lose that type of fight and you don't fight for a while, you do get lost in the shuffle. And if you recall, Ankalaev was so disturbed by that draw, he actually thought he was going to leave the UFC and maybe not fight anymore. Remember that?
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, again, you go down that list, you have Jamahal Hill, who, again, kind of had a very quick run towards the title, looked good, and then he looked great his last fight, but he fought somebody who was retiring. You have Ankalaev, who comes off the draw that everybody thought he won, and then he's just kind of disappeared since then. He hasn't really been brought up in many conversations, which is unfortunate. And then you have Yuri Prochazka, who was the champion, who I think, again, he's one of these guys that has a lot of flaws. He puts himself in terrible positions, but then he's able to score crazy knockouts and even apparently some submissions as well. So that, like I said, that division's just in such a strange place, but Ankalaev is a guy that I feel like has fallen out of that conversation. I'd be interested to hear what he's up to when he plans to compete again. And maybe that's something that I'll have to look into going forward here.
No, you're absolutely right, man. We definitely got to keep the microscope under Ankalaev, because that just might be the future UFC lightweight champion before we know it. You got to keep moving on, man. And one of my favorite things that you're doing right now with MMA Junkie is getting the opportunity to interview Kurt Holubow after his Ultimate Fighter episodes. And it's badass, man. I really, really like the Ultimate Fighter this season. I've talked about it before on the show. I think that the rookies were in tough this season against all the guys that Dana White brought back on the show. You know, Hubbard, Valiev, Roosevelt. The list goes on. Jason Knight, man. I feel disappointed. I can't name them all off the top of my head. But literally, these guys are killers. And as I thought, man, they're running through the rookie prospects and they're making it look really easy. And that's not a problem. I kind of think the UFC wanted to do that to kind of showcase how good these fighters are. Who do you think out of the fighters that are left could win the show, or the two guys that could make the finals? And also talk about the stories that Kurt has told you about the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you said, I think they've done an excellent, almost, it's interesting. My understanding is that when it comes to picking these rosters, that the matchmakers don't really have much of a input in this whole thing. Like, they're not the ones leading the charge. It's actually the Ultimate Fighter producers. But I think they've almost done too good of a job of bringing back the right veterans. You know, I think initially when this idea was pitched, I thought, oh, it's going to be a bunch of guys that maybe kind of not washed out of the sport, but, you know, guys that lost for a reason. But they did a really good job of picking guys that were, you know, maybe one of 12 names in a batch of UFC releases that we all said, they could have got one more. They had some tough fights or whatever, stuff like that, where they just picked, you know, eight guys that are clearly deserved maybe another UFC shot, that are certainly UFC caliber, and they all have the advantage over the prospects because they've been there, they've done that, they've been in the high caliber positions where a lot of these prospects really haven't. So the season's been interesting so far. Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler obviously brought a lot more eyeballs onto it. I think the season got off to a very good start with some knockouts. The fights have been all pretty good, but I think the last couple episodes maybe there hasn't been as much inside and outside the cage talking points or action compared to the first two, where you had the crazy quick knockout in the first episode by Roosevelt Roberts, and then you had the knee by Cody Gibson in episode two. So a really good talent pool, I would say, kind of coming into it. Removing myself from the results that have been, you know, have already happened, I think Valiev would have been a guy that I would have had circled for bantamweight. And then, you know, to be honest with you, at lightweight, kind of, it's a tough one, man. I like Roosevelt Roberts a lot. I've always thought Kurt Hollabaugh, not trying to be biased because we do that together, that that weekly piece together, but I always thought he kind of got an unfair shake, and then he fought three guys in the UFC that were all, you know, Shane Burgos, Thiago Moises, and Hione Barcelos, who obviously all went on to do great things. So I've always thought he's a bit underrated. Austin Hubbard was cut pretty early, I think a little bit too early for him, or excuse me, for his how good he is. So those were kind of the names that when this first came out, I kind of had circled. And then on the prospect side, I was very high on Landon Quinones, who has yet to fight on this season. I think he's pretty good down out of Titan FC. And yeah, those were kind of the names that stuck out to me when these rosters were first announced.
Now, it's definitely a fun time on The Ultimate Fighter, man. I still can't believe that Brad Katona got cut from the UFC when he did, considering he won The Ultimate Fighter, and he was actually fighting pretty well, but he was never the most exciting fighter, I guess you can say. Kind of when Dana White didn't give Brendan Loughnane, who became the PFL champ and won those $1 million, he didn't give him that contract because he went for that takedown in the final 15, 20 seconds of that fight instead of going for the kill. I kind of put Brad Katona in that same spot as a Brendan Loughnane, Nolan.
Yeah, very similar, you know, and I think the UFC over time has done a good job of trying to make the sport more exciting, but also I think sometimes they've gone a little bit too overboard where anybody that's got a wrestling base, even if they're a really good fighter, they kind of sometimes will axe them a little bit soon. And that's what happened with Valiev, too. I think he was like 2-1-1 in the UFC or 2-1 with a no contest or something. So he was an excellent fighter, too. Katona was up there as well. He kind of separated at an unusual time, so I'm happy to see that he's back. And, yeah, man, I mean, to be honest with you, like I said, they did a good job drafting the rosters, a little bit almost too good of a job with the vets. But it will give a lot of these guys a good redemption story, a good comeback story. And I'm interested to see if the Team McGregor can keep up – excuse me, Team Chandler can keep up the success because they're – halfway on their way to a sweep, man.
We are talking to Nolan King from MMA Junkie and USA Today. You can follow his work on Tapology. Follow him on Twitter at @MMA_Kings. Before we get you out of here, we got to talk about Conor McGregor and Mike Chandler. Do you think this fight happens? Because the news right now surrounding Mike Chandler is that Conor McGregor might want to skip him over. We saw Armin Sarkoohian, after winning this past weekend, call out Chandler and say, yo, man, you got to be dumber than your fight IQ to think that Conor McGregor is going to actually take this fight with you. What do you think is going to happen?
It's tough to say. I think we will, again, this is maybe a cop-out of an answer, but I think we got about 3 more months, I think, before they actually officially pull the plug on the fight. I think Michael Chandler, if he's smart, would hold out. I mean, you want to give yourself the best chance possible to have a Conor McGregor opportunity if it comes. I don't care if Conor loses 6 fights in a row. I don't care if he, is the most, you know, I don't know. If he continues his downward spiral that it seems like he's on, I think regardless of all that, Michael Chandler is going to want that fight. I mean, he'd be stupid not to take it. So I think the plan was, obviously, it seemed like to have this fight in December. I don't think that that's necessarily going to happen. There's some talk about Conor's eligibility with the USADA pool, whether or not he's in it right now, which he would have had to declare by June 16th in order to fight on that final pay-per-view of the year on December 16th at T-Mobile. We don't know if that's happened, but it seems like it hasn't. We have no indication that it has. So I guess we'll figure that out probably more firmly in the next few weeks if Conor does not get a USADA test that would indicate that he did not enter the pool. So yeah, if I'm Mike Chandler, I wait a couple more months, 3 more months at least, try to get it figured out for the Q1 of next year. I'm not sure what kind of agreement, if any, he has with the UFC. I'm not sure if they're going to maybe throw him a few bones for sitting out and not taking a fight. I hope that they are. But yeah, it'll be interesting, man. I mean, I think Sarukian's call out was very smart for him. I think he doesn't talk enough to get big fights, and guys don't necessarily want to fight somebody that doesn't have that promotional upside for them. That's a very dangerous fight. So I think he's very smart with this call out. But at the same time, I think the reality of the situation is Michael Chandler is going to hold out as long as he can to get this Conor sweepstakes.
Well, even if he doesn't, there's a consolation prize for him, and there's also a consolation prize for us fight fans, Nolan. You know why? Because Eddie Alvarez came out today on Twitter and said, "Hey, Mike Chandler, you'll never be without a potential opponent as long as I am still breathing, buddy. At Dana White, at UFC, know the deal. Trilogy time." That would be super fun. So if it doesn't happen with Connor, we get a consolation prize, guys. We get the Underground King Eddie Alvarez, who will most likely come back to the UFC just to fight Michael Chandler, maybe from a despedida as a goodbye from the UFC for Mike Chandler heading into retirement, possibly, man. Mike Chandler is pretty old in fight years.
Yeah, no, that would be fantastic. And I think, again, there would have to be a lot that was figured out. I think there was a period of time maybe when Eddie became a free agent from one championship where Dana was asked about him. And Dana didn't necessarily say no, but he said, you know, we're more interested in looking at guys that are young and on the come up. I wonder if the Chandler fight would twist their arm a little bit. And I know that Dana and Eddie have always had a very good relationship, even after Eddie left. It seems like they had been in contact. I believe, actually, when Sean Brady got signed to the UFC, the matchmakers were not very interested in him at the time, saying that he was boring and he was a wrestler, whatnot. And I think Eddie actually went to Dana. This is when Eddie had just signed with one, and he called Dana and said, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Like, I promise you, this kid's going to be good. He's going to be a contender." And that was a signing that Dana actually overrided. Dana overrided. He got Sean Brady on board and onto the roster. So to me, that indicates that Dana still has a lot of respect, that he would kind of listen to the advice of a guy who had just left for another promotion. So I think that respect level's there, and who knows, maybe the Chandler fight would be sexy enough for them to bring Eddie Alvarez back despite his age and longevity in the sport.
Well, there you have it, folks. You know what, Nolan? You put me up against the cage, man. I know that you're a busy guy. You're covering PFL, Bellator, UFC. We could talk for hours, my friend, and I mean that. I want to thank you again for coming on Hit the Bell this week. I can't wait to get you on again in the future, man. You're the best.
Anytime, man. Anytime you need me, we'll do this again soon, and keep killing it. It's always a pleasure.
Again, fans, you could find Nolan King at MMA Junkie USA Today and Tapology. Follow Nolan on Twitter at MMA_Kings. Nolan King, everybody!
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matthias Verbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
What's up, fight fans? Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matthias Verbell. Big round, big show lined up for you guys today, because I have a very special guest lined up for you guys today. But we have her right now. Number 11 ranked UFC women's flyweight contender in the world, Macy the Future Barber, joins Hit the Bell right now. She is fighting Amanda Ribas this Saturday at UFC Jacksonville. Macy is kicking ass. You can follow her on Twitter and on Instagram at Macy Barber. Welcome to Hit the Bell, Macy. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. You just like totally hyped that whole thing up. That was great.
Well, that's what I do. I got to get you ready for the morning. I got to get you ready for these interviews. I got to get you ready to rock and give you some information. Let the world know about Macy Barber, and that's what we're going to do today. So let's get started. Before we jump into this fight with Amanda Ribas, we could talk about this fight all day long. We could answer the same questions that you've been answering 1,000 times getting ready for this fight, and we will. We definitely will. But first things first, let's go back in time. Let's get back into your life right now, and let's get back to the roots. Let's start talking about why you got into martial arts, at what age you got into martial arts. What's your motivation? You're a young woman, 25 years young. You got into martial arts and started fighting professionally at a very young age. Where did this begin for you? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I started in martial arts at 3. It was something that my parents put like me and my sister and my brothers in. And they also did it as well. So it was kind of like a family thing. And I had no idea, obviously at 3 years old, that this was going to turn into like a full-blown career and way of life for me. But martial arts has been my life since I can like remember. And I grew up in karate, and then my family started a karate school. We ended up transitioning into jiu-jitsu, and I did some competitions for quite a while. And I remember like telling my parents and telling my dad, I was like, I want to fight. And they were like, yeah, right. Cause they're like 15, 16. They're like, yeah, sure you do, kid. You know? And then after I told them, and like, I think they realized that I was serious, and they got behind me, and you know, my dad was like, all right, if you're gonna do this, we're gonna do this right, and you're gonna get around the best. And so he really, like, you know, supported that and decided, like, took me to gyms and took me to training. And I started training at, you know, incredible places. I trained, you know, with Trevor Whitman, Dwayne Ludwig, Jackson Wink. I trained all over, and that ended up transitioning into me being a amateur for, like, a single fight. Ryan Schultz was my main coach all the way up until I fought in Contender Series, and then from there, signing with the UFC. Like, it's been such a whirlwind and such, like, a fast track that, like, I've just been, like, on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing, and it's been so fast. But I couldn't have asked for a better life and a better career trajectory.
It's super fun that your parents got right behind you from the start of it and got you completely entrenched, because that's where the passion comes from. That's where the dedication comes from. I loved how you were learning different forms of martial arts from such a young age, because that's when you figure out what if you really like this or not. And obviously you found that you actually did love this. And a curious question for me to you is, what was your favorite type of martial arts growing up? Because as a kid, you could only like so many things, right? Sometimes you don't want to get on the ground. Sometimes you just want to go to karate and throw roundhouse kicks and throw snap kicks and put on your sparring gear instead of rolling around on the mat. What's your favorite? Do you have one or the other where it's like, oh, it's jiu-jitsu practices today, I don't have to go hit the pads. Hell yeah, let's go try to break some arms, right?
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of like a multi-answer question, because, like, that's why I'm in the sport that I'm in. That's why I'm in MMA, because I feel like there's always something that you can improve on, and to be the best in the world, you have to be good everywhere. And so on the days that you're like, hey, my body's not feeling it for grappling, like, maybe I watch film on grappling, but I'm gonna do actual striking training, you know, maybe I'm gonna hit pads, maybe I'm gonna go do kickboxing or boxing or whatever it is, you know, like, there's the ways to do everything but also not do everything, if that makes sense. And for me, I mean, I love all of it, and that's why, again, that's why I'm in the sport that I'm in. It's really hard to be in the sport that I'm in and hate doing one of those things, you know, because then I should just stick to the one that I enjoy. So it's actually a hard balance because of how much I enjoy doing all of it. It's like, which one do I choose? Which one do I, you know, when I'm training, it's like, how do you pass up on training one of them, you know? So I'll do jiu-jitsu, I'll do wrestling, I'll do striking, I'll do all of the things, and then sure enough, it's like a 3-4-5 hour like day of training, and it's sometimes that's a little too much. So it's actually a little bit hard for me to answer that question, because I don't really have a favorite. I love to do it all, and that's what makes me a well-rounded fighter.
That's the best answer you actually could have given. You know, I think that's what makes you such a pro. That's what makes you such a pro right there. Me, for example, if you ask me, do you want to go lift or do you want to do cardio? I'm going to say, I want to go do cardio. I used to be a soccer player, so I'll never be the one that says, definitely, yeah, let's go to the gym. Oh, yeah, well, that's why you're a fighter, and I'm a runner right there, Macy. You know, two different types of animals, you know what I mean? We are talking.
I love lifting.
Oh, well, you know what? That's why you punch like a beast, and that's why you're in the UFC. That's why if I stepped in the octagon with you, you would take me down, you know, choke me out, or you could either destroy me on the feet. You could have your choice, and I'll serve it up on a platter for you. I won't be able to defend myself very well against you, Macy, let me tell you. We are talking to the number 11 ranked UFC flyweight contender in the world, Macy, the future barber. She holds a 12-2 record right now in her professional MMA career. She started out 3-0 in the UFC with 3 TKOs. And that doesn't count the Contender Series knockout that she had as well. Let's get to your fight. Let's get to your career right now, Macy. I really wanted to get to this because you came into the UFC with a storm. You had a lot of confidence, a lot of motivation. In my opinion, based off of the way that you spoke, it almost seemed like you always knew you were going to win. And that's what you need to be, in my opinion, when you get to the UFC. You need to be one of those animals that think is going to go undefeated until you actually don't. Talk about the win streak that you had in the UFC and that confidence that you had. Did it ever get to a point where you thought, am I ever going to lose? Or did you kind of know, like, we're going to face a battle eventually. Am I going to be ready for it?
You know, I don't picture losing. I mean, I know that, you know, every time you step into the cage, there's always a threat of there's always a threat of I could get hurt, you know, but I never am like, yeah, I could lose. You know, I just don't let that enter my mind. And it's just something that, like, I don't want to acknowledge something that is already there. Like, obviously, when two people get into the cage, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. But for me to allow any ounce or any even, like, sliver of that, you know, it just doesn't make sense. And it's just not something that I do. Instead, you know, I do get anxious. I do get a little bit like, oh, how am I going to do this? Like more just like picturing and like visualizing. When I visualize, like, I don't visualize, how I'm going to, like, any part of losing. It's how am I going to win? How am I going to finish? How am I going to perform? How am I going to, you know? And I get excited because it's like, I know all the work that I put in. So it's more of like, I have so many skills, like, which one am I going to get to use? You know, which one am I going to get to show off? Which one is going to get to shine in this fight? And I feel like that's more of like the anxiousness and the excitement that I get. And there's never a single doubt in my mind of will I lose this fight? You know, like that's just not even in like the vocabulary that I have. And for me, like being on a win streak, like, you know, the 3-fight win streak that I had and now the 4-fight win streak that I have again now, like, I feel like I'm just like continuing my whole life to win, you know. For me, like, even the 2 losses that I had, like, it doesn't even, yeah, they were losses on paper, but in my heart and in my mind and as a career, like, it's, they're all wins because I learned so much from them and I would never, you know, I would never take it back. And for me, it's just like, the sky's the limit, and I'm just riding that confidence. And I have that confidence again in this win streak that I have right now. The only difference is I have the confidence and I have the like experience behind it as well. You know, I have the knowledge, I have the experience, and I have, you know, all of the past to go off of and to learn from and to continue to grow from. And I feel like that's what I possess and that's what continues to make me a dangerous fighter.
Is that what you learned in your 2-fight losing streak that you had? Because for the fans that don't know, Macy was rolling, and then she had a little injury against Roxanne Modafferi. She was a substantial favorite in that fight. I like to say a little to keep under the weather. You know, nothing is that big because you recovered from it. You came back, and like you said, now you're on a 4-fight streak. But nothing doesn't go through this journey without learning. You know, you don't literally lose. Either we win or you learn. And in this case, you learned. And you had to fight Alexa Grasso after Modafferi. And, you know, sometimes that's just a bad draw because look where Grasso is now. She is now the champion of the division after taking down Shevchenko. That just goes to show how great you are and pretty much what level you had to set your bar at to get to where you want to be. And look what you did after that, Macy. 2-fight losing streak. Forget about that. You go through Miranda Maverick. You go through Montana De La Rosa. You go through Jessica I. Who hasn't she fought, Macy? And then ABC, who was on a roll. Andrea Lee is dangerous, and a lot of people thought you were going to lose that fight. Not the case. 4-fight win streak, and here you are now in the co-main event against Amanda Kibas, and you want to take her number 9 spot. This is incredible stuff for you right now, Macy, and you're on ABC 5 on national television this Saturday. Let's go, Macy Barber. How are you feeling right now?
I'm so pumped. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. I mean, for real, like, you know, coming off of that little injury of, you know, being able to go all 3 rounds and then, you know, my comeback fight after a year layoff was fighting the current champ and winning a round against her and, you know, knowing that I have that in my mind and knowing that, you know, what if that round was a main event? What if that round was 5? What if that fight was 5 rounds? You know, like, that's where my mind goes and that's where the excitement comes into, is like, she's a champ now, you know, someday I want a main event against her. And you know what? Like, I think, I mean, everyone has seen it. I get better as the rounds go on. So, I'm that kind of fighter, and now I'm on a 4-fight win streak, and I'm just going to continue to carry that on, and it's going to be a 5-fight win streak on Saturday. And I am so excited for this fight. I feel like this is a fight where I shine, and I feel like this is a fight where I get to go out and perform and show off the future and show off everything that I am capable of and everything that I've been working on within myself and with the coaches.
You just said the future, Macy, the future Barber. Where did this nickname come from? Who gave it to you? Why has it stuck for so many years?
it stuck. I honestly, I can't even remember. I think I want to say my family came up with it. And we, you know, I don't know how to like pick a fight name or any of that. We went through a few and, this one just kind of stuck. And to me, I feel like it fits. Everyone keeps asking me they're like, when are you going to change it to the present? When are you going to change it to the past? They're like joking with me, you know? And I'm just like, I feel like the future is like so much deeper. It's not even like about me. If you understand what I mean, it's like, it's not even about me. That name isn't even about me. It's about, you know, reminding myself that there's always like the future, you know, there's always something more. There's always, something greater that you can do or become. And so I guess when I hear it personally, I think of, you know, the endless possibilities that lay in front of you. You know, it's like the sky is the limit. Like you never know what's going to happen in the future. Like anything can happen, you know, and it just like kind of reminds me to take every day and just like maximize it and create a better future for myself. So I guess that's kind of how I take it. And, it's something that's stuck and I'm good with it. Like I didn't choose it, but it works, you know, and I love it.
Hey, you know what? It's catchy. It's pissed off a lot of women in the division, I'm sure, who are always afraid of you and who, yeah, you know, oh, what a cocky little girl of the future, huh? Well, you know what? It worked out because you put a target on your back. And in my opinion, that's what you need to do in the UFC. You need people talking about you. You need people tweeting about you. You need people having eyes on you. And with a name like that and with the way that you perform, with your aggressiveness, with your no fear going forward, wanting to finish fights, it all comes together for the number 11 ranked Macy Barber, who's ready to kick some ass against a man to Hibas this Saturday. Last question for you, because we're talking about the future. I know you talked about how many camps you switched when you first started MMA, but I know after your previous victory against ABC, you got emotional in your post-fight conference, as you should have because of the journey that you've been on and where you were at the time. But you talked about how great the gym was that you found at Alpha Male and how you actually found a family that opened up their arms to you and you kind of felt at home, you know, for a change. Talk about the impact of the gym and you know, the impact of Uriah Faber and how he's gotten you ready for this fight.
I mean, it's been a huge impact. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm on a 4-fight win streak and I'm on, you know, this is going to be my fifth fight and my fifth win, like win in the streak. And, for me, you know, like I said, I love where I'm at and it's very nice to walk into a gym and have the energy be positive, have the coaches be positive, have the skill set be there, have everything be there in the room and know that when you're walking in the gym, you're walking into greatness and you're walking into people that are motivated to get better, people that are focused on winning, people that are focused on growth. And, you know, there's guys that come in off of wins and there's guys that come in right off of their losses and they're always back on Monday. And it's something that's very motivating because, you know, when a lot of fighters, you see a lot of fighters take a loss and they don't show up and you see a lot of fighters take a win and they don't show up. And it's one of those things where it's like, we want more. We want more. Like this is good, but it's not great. You know, like we're chasing greatness and you can see that when you walk in that room. And that's something that like, if you surround yourself with it, you know, you're going to get there. And, Uriah has created that environment. Like Uriah has definitely set that tone for everyone. There's never been a gym that I've walked into with the person's name on it. You know, like I've walked into a lot of gyms with, people with names, and Uriah has Uriah Faber's Ultimate Fitness. And when you walk in that gym at Team Alpha Male, he's there. He's always there. And if he's not there, he's like with another fighter. And to see someone who puts in that effort and creates the environment, but not just creates the environment for fighters to train in, but creates the environment with the energy and carries that over. And it shows, you know, and it shows in the performances and it shows in the fighters. And that's why he has such a huge team. And that's, the reason why I'm there, you know, is because of the environment and because of the people and the team that he has put together with all of the coaches and been able to keep everyone as a family and as a whole, you know, that's why everyone sticks around and that's why it's one of the best teams on the planet.
We are talking to the number 11 ranked flyweight contender in the world, Macy the Future Barber, with a 12-2 record. She just finished talking about Alpha Male and her team and how great it has been for her in Northern California. She is fighting Amanda Ribas this Saturday on ABC 5, UFC ABC 5, this coming Saturday at UFC Jacksonville. Macy, I wish we had more time. We could keep talking for hours. I love your story. I love how you fight. I want to thank you for coming on Hit the Bell. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Macy Barber, everyone.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matthias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. Aloha. Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matthias Burbell. Man, we have been pumping out guests this show, and it ain't stopping. We had Nolan King. We had Macy Barber. But it's time for your best bets. And you know who's going to give you those best bets? Adam Martin and me. But you can follow Adam at bookies.com, at MMA Odds Breaker, and at mymmanews.com. Follow Adam on Twitter, at MMAdamMartin. Let's go. What's up, Adam? Welcome to Hit the Bell.
Dude, you killed it, man. You got everything right. Like, you're one of the first people that got my Twitter handle right. You got all my media outlets right. I appreciate you, my friend. You did it good, man. You did a good job there. So I got to live up to the standard now, man, with my picks. I got to win the people some money this weekend.
Hey, man, when you introduce the guests, you got to do it right, man. You got to let the people know who they're talking to, who they're listening to. And it's just doing you the justice, man. I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. This is the first time we have you on. So we got to do it right, baby. And it's time to make some money. So let's do it, Adam Martin. UFC Vegas, Jacksonville, bro. We also have PFL coming up. But let's get to the main entree. Everybody's waiting for the UFC. There's a lot of dogs on this card, I think. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, well, we can start with the main event, I guess. Like, don't really see the dog winning here, man. I like Topuria in this fight. Like, the odds are a little inflated. It's a bit over minus 300, but I'm really high on this guy, and I think he could be a champion one day, man. So, to me, it's like, it's really tough to bet against him. Undefeated young prospect here who has knockout power, submission prowess. Everything's been really sharp in the UFC so far. There's one tough fight he had where he got dropped, but other than that, he's looked amazing. Emmett, 38 years old, coming off a submission loss. I don't see the dog winning in this one. I like the favorite here, man. You know, it's a good parlay piece in my opinion. And then for me, like on the prelims, there's another favorite I like, which would be, I think it's the second fight of the night now, Tatsuo or Tyra. Another, again, undefeated prospect. I like betting on the undefeated prospects. They not only have undefeated records, but in the UFC, they've shown skills too. Like, he has 3 wins in the UFC, 2 by finish. Guys look phenomenal. So, for me, those are 2 favorites that I like. I know you asked about a dog. There's one dog I definitely like on this card. I think there's a lot of fights, man, where there's live dogs. Like, I do think there's a lot of fights that the odds are a little bit wider than they should be and that the dog has realistic paths to victory. I'll talk about that in a sec here. But as far as a dog that I, like, genuinely like here and that I think has some value, I don't understand how Trevor Peak's the dog right now, man. I really don't get it. I got to be honest, guys. Like, he opened at, like, minus 200. Now it was a pick-em, and now he looks like he's, like, slight underdog to Chepe Mariscal, who is a good prospect, too, but taking a fight super short notice a week and moving up in weight class, which everyone seems to be ignoring. He's a featherweight, usually. So he's a good fighter, a lot of experience, and I think he'll do pretty well in the UFC. But, dude, Peak's one of those guys that has that dog in him, man. He's one of those guys that will fight for your money. You know that you will get a guy that will fight until he gets knocked out or choked unconscious with Trevor Peak. And he's never lost. He's won all his fights by knockout. And I don't understand who's the dog right now. I really don't get it. It's always a little bit worrisome when that happens because it's like, it doesn't make sense to me why the line moved but so far in his direction. I guess from what I've seen, like maybe some sharp good tip the other side, I get that. Because, again, he's a pretty good fighter, Mariscal. But at the same time, guys, again, super short notice, up a weight class. I'm taking a shot on my boy Trevor Peak, man. Again, I don't really understand who's the dog right now in some of these books. Like, it's crazy. You can get him, like, at around a pick-em price or rate, like, an even money. Man, take that.
I like it. I like it, Adam. Trevor Peak, you're right, man. He finishes fights. He Kama Worthy, Luis Gonzalez. He showed up on the Contender Series. The fight rarely gets out of the first round. At the Contender Series, he finished the fight in the second round. You guys heard it from Adam Martin. Peak right now, it's at a pick'em at -110, depending on which book you're looking at, over Chepe Mariscal. Remember that name, guys. Trevor Peak. Adam also likes Ilya Topuria as some parlay material, along with the Japanese fighter Tatsuro Taira. Tatsuro is an exciting fighter, man. I'm with you right there. I like how he's the second fight of the night. Morning, I guess you can say. And I like how the people in Japan are going to be able to watch their boy fight early in the morning over there, man. He's 13-0, but kind of a dangerous fight. I think Clayton's pretty good. I do like Tatsuro with you, bro, but man, this is kind of a scary fight for him. This is definitely a step up compared to the other guys that he's fought so far, right?
I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I think Clayton's a good prospect, too. And I'm a little surprised they did a matchup, right? Because they usually don't do, like, two flyweight prospects. But Clayton's lost. We've seen him on the ground. He's pretty good. But I think Tyra's way better on the ground. I think he's one of the better grapplers in the division right now. The Lions actually, you know, went down a little bit this week. So there's definitely some other side action coming in, which I think is fine. But honestly, man, like, I like that two-team parlay, Topuria and Tyra. They are two of the biggest favorites on the card. But I think they both hit. Like, to me, there's some other favorites on the card that I'm more worried about. You know, like I'll give you an example. Like, I like Randy Brown as a fighter. I think he's a really good fighter. I think he's a really underrated fighter, right? But now he's, like, depending on the book, -225 to -275 against Wellington Turman. And everyone's fading Turman, right, because he's been knocked out a couple times in the UFC and everything. But, like, again, as you know, Matias, you got to pay attention to all the details. And the detail, again, being missed here, this guy's moving down in weight to 170 from 185. A guy training with Glover Teixeira and Alex Pereira. Like, this is a pretty good young fighter. He's only 26. Like, again, Randy Brown's a really good fighter. I really like him here. But that's the kind of fight, man, that I could see a potential upset in, you know? And there's a few other ones in the card like that. Like Amanda Ibas as well. I like her. She's a good fighter. I favor her slightly against Macy Barber. But I also feel like Macy, who you said, I think you have her on the show this week, I think she's a live dog too. So I think it's one of those cards where you kind of got to take your spot, be safer a little bit in this card, because there are quite a few favorites that, like, seem really tempting, but the other side has a realistic path to victory. So, like I said, just be on the lookout, you know, for both sides and all those little details, because I feel like they get missed sometimes, like the weight class changes and stuff like that. You got to know that stuff, I think, before betting on these fights.
No, you nailed it on the head, Adam. I love how you bring up the fact that Randy Brown's going down in weight. That changes the whole entire picture. You don't know how that cut's going to be. You don't know how he's going to react if he gets hit in the face. There's so many different intangibles that go into dropping in weight or even going up in weight. And that is a big, big thing to put under the microscope, guys. Randy Brown stands at -230 against Wellington Turman at +190. Wellington likes to take these fights to the ground. You know, he's from Brazil. He has jiu-jitsu. He has good wrestling. He has gotten better as his UFC career has actually progressed. He had a tough loss against Petrosky, who's an excellent, excellent wrestler, as MMA fans and Adam know as well. That was a tough matchup for him. I love how you brought up Macy Barber. Macy sounded really, really confident today, Adam, when we were talking to her on Hit the Bell, man. She sounds ready to go. She has no fear, and she thinks she's on her way to her fifth victory. I love how you brought her up. Right now, she's standing at +170 in a lot of books. What do you think of Neil Magny versus Phil Rowe? Neil Magny, we see the line moving up and up and up as, you know, the week progresses. Should people jump on Neil Magny right now before the line gets too high to the point where it's just pointless?
That's a good question. Like, you know what? This is an interesting fight. I like Phil Rowe. I think he's a fun fighter. Obviously got some knockout power. You've seen him get a couple really nice knockouts in the UFC. But the takedown defense worries you, man. Like, some of those fights, like before he came back and won by knockout, he was taken down. He was getting controlled. And Neil's a veteran, man. He's got so much experience in the UFC now. Like, it's ridiculous how many fights he has. He's going to tie Matt Brown this weekend for most welterweight fights. Those guys are both neck and neck right now. I think he has the most wins, tied with GSP, if I'm not mistaken. So this guy's been around for a long time. He wins fights. He knows how to win. To get him under -200, I think it's a pretty good bet, too. He's another guy that I like this weekend. Again, you got to take your spots on this card, but, like, this is one I'm liking, too, because of the experience, man. Like, Phil Rowe, again, you know, good fighter, but I think he's got, like, 13 fights, and Magny's got, like, I want to say 37 or something. Like, that's a big difference. And in the UFC, it's a big difference of fights. Magny's got, like, 25 to 30 UFC fights, I want to say, at this point. It's crazy, man. And Rowe's got, I think, three, right? So Rose a good fighter. He's got some knockout power, obviously. He's an interesting guy, but the thing is, man, he's not like 25 years old. He's in his like low mid 30s right now. It's not like he's a super young up and coming prospect. Like a Macy Barber to me, she's only 25, right? Like she's not a finished product yet, right? With Macy, and people forget about that because she's been in the UFC for like 5 years now, I think, and she has fought some pretty good competition. But like she's still improving. Whereas a guy like Roe, yeah, he's showing improvements in his fights, but like I do feel like there's a cap at some point to how good you can get, and I kind of feel like he's capped out here. So for me, like Magny, to get a guy who's like top 15 perennial fighter, and there's some books with like you're getting minus 160 on him. Like I like that too. I don't know what you think, but I like him here to probably win a decision.
I love Magny. When I saw this matchup, Adam, my initial thought was they're handing this guy off on a plate to Magny. You know, sometimes when you go through hell and back, you got to get some love from the UFC and from your company. I think that's just the thing. I don't know how you could go from fighting Gilbert Burns and then going to fight Phil Rowe. You know what I mean? Talk about a change in competitor, right?
No, absolutely. It's a step down, right, compared to that fight. And then you look at the fight before that against Daniel Rodriguez, who I think is a good fighter. I know you're an L.A. guy. He's from L.A. Like, you know he's a good fighter. And he dismantled him, right? Like, that's a guy that's, you know, borderline top 50, but still, like, Phil Rowe's not even ranked. I'm not saying he couldn't be top 15 because there's probably some fights he could win in the top 15. But Daniel Rodriguez is a guy who is a legitimate guy at the bottom end of the top 15, and Magny dismantled him. So to me, he's still got something in the tank. And you look at the losses recently, like you said, Gilbert Burns, Shavkat Rakhmonov, like most people lose to those guys. So I don't take too much away from that. At some, like, I know Neil's, you know, his mid to late 30s now. He's going to start declining at some point, but I still think we can get him for a couple more fights as a winner. And I think this is one of them, and it's a good price, I think, too.
We are talking to Adam Martin. You could follow Adam at bookies.com, also at MMA Oddsbreaker and mymmanews.com. You guys want to win some bets? Go follow Adam. You can also follow him on Twitter at @MMAdamMartin. Let's go. We are rolling right now on Hit the Bell with Adam Martin, and we're having a good time. We're talking UFC Jacksonville coming up this Saturday. He's talking about the dogs. He gave us two parlay pieces in Tatsuro Taira and Ilia Topuria coming up this weekend. Also, Neil Magny, some good value right now at minus 160. The line is starting to move up. Also, his pick, Trevor Peak, right now. Grab him before you can't. Minus 110 against Chepe Mariscal. That is Adam Martin's best bet right now. We're having a good time. Hey, Adam, before we move on to PFL, I got to ask you a question. Tabatha Ritchie, you know, the shark girl, she's kicking ass right now. She's 8-1 professional. She's minus 130 in some books. She's fighting Jillian Robertson at plus 110. She's 12-7. I like Ritchie right now. I think she's the real deal. I love her energy. I love her all-around game. She could get this fight to the ground, but she also has a lot of durability with those hands, man. What do you think of Ritchie?
Yeah, dude, I like her too here. That's another spot. Like, I have the card out right now. I'm looking at the board, and that's another spot that I do like because I think it's a good matchup for her. You know, she's also really good in the ground. Like, obviously, Robertson is great in the ground. I mean, her submission skills are, like, all time in the UFC. I think she has maybe the most submissions in the female division, right? Like, divisions, or at least up there. So she's incredible in the ground. But, like, now she takes on Ritchie, who's also very good in the ground and very good defensively sound. Never been submitted. She's lost, obviously, Ritchie, but stand-up fight against Manon Fiorot. Like, Robertson's stand-up's not very good. She's a ground fighter. She did drop down in weight in her last fight from 125 to 115, and obviously at 115, Robertson's going to have the size advantage over many girls, including in this fight. She's slightly bigger, but Ritchie, man, physically strong. Like, go look at some of the pictures of this girl. Like, she's a bull. She's strong, man. I think she's going to be able to, like, not let Robertson take her down, get her on the bottom. I think, if anything, Ritchie's going to be the one on top in this fight, kind of controlling the fight. I think this fight, you know, a lot of Robertson's fight go under the rounds, but I feel like this one's going to go over. I think Ritchie, the way we've seen her fight, she likes to fight a little bit safer, but that's okay, right? It's okay. We're just trying to win money here. It doesn't matter the style points. I'm not looking to win a $50,000 bonus. I just want to win $50,000 on Ritchie. No, I'm just kidding. It wouldn't be that much money, but I think she wins, man. I think she wins the decision, so I'm with you. But, like, if you get her, I'm seeing minus 130 here. Like, I like that price. I think it's a fair price to pay, personally, this week. So I like her to win a decision there.
Nice, guys. Adam, we're having a blast right now, and I like where your head's at, man. And I'm glad that you're agreeing with me. Holy smokes, I'm doing something right. Adam Martin agrees with me. Let's go!
On Sunday morning, man, if we wake up with a shirt on or not.
Well, I have to recover from this past weekend, man. I still got blood coming out of my mouth, man. I got my ass whooped at UFC Vegas 75, so I'm looking for a recovery, and it usually happens the week after, man. So it's time to do some homework and really get to this. We're talking to Adam Martin from MMA Oddsmaker right now, and woo, we're having a blast. We're going through fights. If you've noticed, Adam, every single week in the PFL, it seems to me like there's a massive underdog that always wins. There's only one, and maybe there's two, but last week we had one, and the week prior I feel like we had two, and we're talking about big dogs here, guys.
Yep.
And it's not really a luck. You know, this isn't like some lucky draw that we're getting. Like, some of these guys are actually winning because they're damn good and the book doesn't know what to do. Do you see anything like that in this week's PFL card?
That's the thing about, like, these PFL cards, right? Because, like you said, like, you look at the fights and, like, it just seems obvious, like, a lot of these fights. You're like, yep, this guy wins, and he's, like, minus 500. Yep, this guy wins, he's minus 1,000, right? And you see that for, like, 11 fights. But then the 12th fight, the dog wins at, like, plus 800 or something. So that's the tricky thing about these PFL cards because, yeah, I think most of the dogs most of the favorites do win, but you know that a couple dogs or at least one is going to bark here, man. And it's difficult to really say which one, like, just based on PFL the last couple of seasons, I find that, like you said, like, it's usually big favorites on their cards, but there's always that surprise. That's what we're trying to figure out. We're trying to find the landmine, right? We're trying to find that guy that's going to crush the parlay. Again, looking at the card, like, I'm looking at it right now, and, like, I think, you know, Aubin Mercier should absolutely win. C should win. Burgos, Magomed Karamov, Umalata, like, these guys are all huge favorites. They also all win. So, honestly, like, although there could be an upset there, I would kind of maybe look at the other fights instead. Just looking at them right now, like, one guy that I think has a chance to win is Solomon Renfro. He's an underdog here. I think the line just opened maybe a couple days, maybe yesterday. He's an underdog. He took the fight at short notice, Solomon Renfro, against Jarrah Hussein Al-Salawi, who actually is a decent fighter with, you know, quite a bit of experience on PFL, but also a guy that hasn't had a ton of success in PFL. And I kind of feel like Solomon can win this fight. He's a guy that was on the Contender Series, if you remember. He didn't get signed yet. He lost a close decision on Contender, and Dana White passed on him. But they just signed him as a prospect recently after he won a couple fights on the regional scene. And I've been pretty impressed with this guy throughout his career. So, to me, like, if you look at his, by the way, this guy's losses are all to UFC fighters, right? Mike Malott, Adam Fugit, we actually just saw fight each other, randomly enough. And then Johnny Parsons, a contender, in a fight that I thought he won. He lost as a big favorite there, but I thought he won the fight. Since then, like I said, won a couple fights. And now he comes into PFL, taking on a guy that is coming off two straight losses by knockout in the first and second round. And really, like, yeah, he impressed in Brave CF, but PFL is a different beast here. And, I think as a dog, he's a guy I'd look at because I think he's a really good prospect, man. And 26 years old here, he's super young. I believe he was training for another fight, so he should be in shape. He should be ready to go here. It's all like it was a guy they pulled up off the coach. He was supposed to fight in the LFA card this weekend. So he's in shape for this fight, man. It is a different matchup for both guys. And I think it's one he's going to win as a dog. So it's not a big dog. It's not a plus 800, guys. Those are hard to sniff out, like that Hayes Pinedo guy a few weeks ago. Like, those are hard to sniff out, those huge dogs. But if you want a small plus money dog, I like Renfro.
Nice. All right, man. Solomon Renfro, 9-3. Let's do it. I like that dog. You know what? Because you sound confident, so that makes me confident. I can't wait to catch that fight tomorrow. Let's go. And if I could build a parlay right now where I say, you know what, I feel pretty good, I would go with Mercier, Burgos, and Clay Collard. Those three guys right there would be a parlay for me where I'd say, you know what, this should actually make me some money and not make me sweat it out. What would you say about that?
They should all win. I you know, the only one guy, like, the first two, OAM definitely wins, and Burgos definitely wins. They're setting up Burgos. Burgos, I think, is the guy that should absolutely win this card, because I think the guy he's fighting is just, it's a setup fight. Collard should win, too. He's a really good fighter, man. He is a lot of fun to watch. He was in the UFC a few years ago, and they let him go. But I do think Stevie Ray's not too bad. He's pulled off some upsets before, so... Yeah, your parlay probably wins. I just think Ray's a little bit underrated. I mean, he did have those two wins over Anthony Pettis, beat Michael Johnson in the UFC. So I don't know if I can get there on him, but the other two pieces for sure. And then, like I said, there's some other big favorites here. But, yeah, I mean, Clay Collard probably wins the fight. I just think Ray's, you know, he's decent. He's not terrible or anything like that, you know?
Absolutely, Adam. Absolutely, man. Hey, it's been a blast having you on Hit the Bell, bro. We got your best bets. We broke down the PFL. We looked at the UFC Jacksonville. And guys, again, if you guys want to hear Adam and if you guys want to catch his work, you guys can go follow him at bookies.com and also MMA Odds Breaker and MyMMAnews.com. Follow Adam on Twitter at MMAdamMartin.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me on, my brother, and we'll do it again for sure, man.
Awesome, guys. Best bets and more with Adam Martin. Let's go.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matthias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Aloha. Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matthias Burbell. What a great show we had today. Man, we were on fire, but we look forward to next week where we will be in Las Vegas, July 1st. Let's go, UFC Vegas 76. Your boy will be there. We'll be covering the event over there. Hit the Bell hits the road. That's right, Hit the Bell hits the road. Main event, Sean Strickland against Abus Magomedov. And also, Grant Dawson's on the card, Demir Ismagulov, Max Griffin, and Michael Morales. Can't wait for that one. Also, Melissa Gatto, she's fighting. We got some bangers on this card coming July 1st in Vegas, and I'll be there. We've had a good time, but the show has come to a conclusion. Nolan King from MMA Junkie came to the party. We chatted about Bellator 297 and all that took place in Chicago. Sergio Pettis still remains a champion. Fun stuff with Nolan. We also chatted with Macy, the future barber, the number 11 ranked UFC women's flyweight contender who will be fighting on UFC on ABC 5 taking place in Jacksonville, Florida. I feel her as an underdog, Macy Barber, plus 150 in some books with the number rising. Vegas likes Amanda Ribas. I like Macy Barber. Let's go, Macy. That's who we're taking. I also want to give a big thank you to Adam Martin from bookies.com and MMA Odd Breakers. He joined us, gave us his best bets. He likes Trevor Peak this Saturday, UFC on ABC 5. That's who he likes. That's who we're going to take. That's why we got Adam on the show. We're going to be back next week for episode number 4. More fighters, more fun, more best bets. You guys name it. Let's go. This is Hit the Bell. Catch you guys next week. Aloha. Hawaiian kickboxer, man, I'm hoping.